one of the most uplifting shows on radio, No Glass Ceiling, introduces women in business who do just that, run their business, and women in business roles that once were taboo. Join me now for No Glass Ceiling on Business Radio X. And again, it's a wonderful time. I love No Glass Ceiling episodes. We're into number 7. We've got some very interesting people again, some wonderful, successful women in business. It's nice to have you. Mark Bishop here at the Stewart Title Studio in Tucson, Arizona, where there's lots of talent and beautiful sunshine. You should come out and join us sometime, wherever you may be listening. And No Glass Ceiling today is featuring three wizards. Christy Street, number 1. She is the co-founder and CEO of Next Trio LLC, some 40 full-time IT professionals. Wow. Next Trio is one of the largest IT departments in Southern Arizona. And in fact, whether you're measuring gross revenue, number of clients, or number of staff, Next Trio is in the top 2% of all similar businesses nationwide. That's pretty cool, huh, for a Tucson company. Second in the middle today is Suzanne Jamison. Jamison & Associates, well, they're an Arizona-based boutique marketing and public relations firm. They specialize in integrated marketing, and No Glass Ceiling today welcomes the owner and president, Suzanne Jamison. Welcome, Suzanne, and welcome, Christy Street. Nice to have you. And last but not least, because you thought I was going to forget about you, didn't you? Hey, Jamie Vink. Jamie, well, since 1983, the caring and skilled staff at Sierra Tucson has been dedicated to providing clinical excellence and compassionate, effective treatment for all who are entrusted into their care. And today I'm very privileged and I'm very happy to welcome the CEO, Jamie Vink. Now, there is a W in there, Jamie. Should I be saying Jamie W. Vink? Or
sure. That's for Welsh.
Mm-hmm. That is for Welsh. And your nationality originally is what?
I'm Irish.
You're Irish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Vink is?
Belgian.
Is Belgian. Well, there's a nice start for you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome today.
Thank you.
Individuals, let's start with you.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals 18 years and over, they go to Sierra Tucson to get help with clinical treatment programs for addiction concerns, depression, anxiety, trauma, chronic pain, and co-occurring disorders like disordered eating. How do you cope with all of these and how do you heal them?
Well, that's a great question. And Sierra Tucson is a leader in what we call the integrative model of treatment. And what the integrative model of treatment does is looks at the whole individual, mind, body, spirit, and part of the spirit is also the relationships. And so what that allows us to do is to look at someone not as a diagnosis, but as an individual. And when we're looking what's going on in their lives and how things could improve, we have very talented treatment teams that provide this integrative service, and we have medical doctors, we have psychologists, we have trained licensed therapists, and we also have a myriad of experiential therapies such as equine psychotherapy, adventure therapy, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And those folks all work collaboratively to support the residents. So how we do, to circle back to your question, is we do it in a very collaborative team effect,
mm-hmm,
to provide integrative care.
Well, it's a lot, and
mm-hmm,
we're going to be going more into that a little bit later. Sierra is recommended by doctors and therapists all across the world,
mm-hmm,
because you are recognized for providing safe and successful treatment for those that are struggling with addiction, a wide range of complex behavioral health disorders. Now, we're talking numbers that have resulted in positive change in the lives of something like 34,000 residents here in Tucson alone and more than 90,000 family members. And this is all in just 35 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's amazing. So what is in your treatment approach, do you think, that makes you so famous? Well, let's say successful.
So I would say that, as I mentioned, the integrative model of care, where we look at all aspects of an individual's life, and also the numbers that you shared talk about family members. Mm-hmm. Addiction and mental illness don't happen in a vacuum, and what happens to one happens to the entire family. And so at Sierra Tucson, we treat the whole family. We have family week, 52 weeks a year, and the family members come for 4 days, and they get to work on anything that's going on within the family system with their loved one,
right,
so that they learn all about their loved one's disorder and also how they may contribute to it.
So they're virtually in the same room with the
Absolutely.
Doctors and the therapists, and they see what goes on and can be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. We're going to come back. We've got to learn a lot from you today, mm-hmm. I can tell you, because you do a wonderful job. Look, Suzanne Jamison, down the middle now. Arizona-based boutique marketing and public relations, but since 2013, you've been helping small businesses and nonprofits with creative PR and marketing strategies that attract interest. How do you go about this, Suzanne? Is it all press, or is it a bit of a mixture? What exactly do you focus on?
I actually work with a blend of different items, and especially lower cost items or free tools for small businesses and nonprofits. Because what I found, especially in Arizona, in southern Arizona, is that a lot of these really hardworking mom and pop companies don't have huge marketing budgets.
No.
So what I go ahead and do is figure out a customized blend of social media, email, and PR, because PR is also a different low-cost component to help these business owners.
So when you do talk about educating customers and building brand awareness,
mm-hmm.
for these little guys with no money, how do you go about that?
Well, first of all, a lot of companies definitely want to be noticed. They do want press. Some are more well-suited for it than others. But my entire approach, and with all the companies that I work with, is that I strongly feel that their best arsenal is actually educating their customers, putting that information out, not sell. In today's age, in terms of marketing and PR, it's very much in terms of educating other, mm-hmm. you know, consumers, B2B, and so forth, those type of clients. And mm-hmm. it's all about just talking to these businesses, finding out exactly what they're needing, find out what type of low-cost tools could be most effective for them. And sometimes they have to kind of be educated on that aspect as well.
As well, yeah. It's not just the people you're targeting who need educating.
That's true.
The people you're trying
to help.
That's
a very good point.
Education,
uh-huh.
right? And you obviously cover not-for-profits as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're a business just like anything else. And we're going to come back and learn a lot about that today in reference to branding and more about maybe some guerrilla marketing techniques mm-hmm. that you use and so on. And one lady who's been extremely successful at her marketing is Christy Strees. She is the co-founder and CEO of Next Trio LLC. As I said, 40-plus full-time IT professionals. Welcome, Christy. I had you here today, invited you especially to No Glass Ceiling for two good reasons. To help us understand what all this technological advancement means to small and medium-sized business owners, and how to make technology a little more strategic in your organization for these little guys. And the other is because you are an exceptional entrepreneur and a very successful businesswoman, you know, that's a big thing these days. Congrats to you on what you have achieved. You've been at the helm for 16 years now. You've built this company from nothing. Just two other partners, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you helped the company see double-digit growth and anticipated big industry changes during that time. Did you know as a startup that you'd be this successful?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
But it's an honest one.
I had more confidence in my partners than perhaps in myself, but I knew that we were a team, and I've always said that together the three of us made one decent business person. They each came with a talent that I don't have, and without me, neither of them would get out of bed and send an invoice or put on matching shoes. I mean, there were some things that I brought to the table. So, was it the right time and the right combination? I had confidence that we would figure it out. And it's funny, I'm kind of glad you let me go last, because a lot of the strategy that a lot of entrepreneurs take when they don't know what they're coming to the table with is a listen in the moment and identify with the things that resonate with you. And as Jamie and Suzanne were talking about their businesses, I heard Jamie talking about the echoes of integrative medicine and integrative therapy. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes there's a lot that IT professionals can do to really integrate people and get people talking. Many, many times it's not about the technology itself. The software might work, but maybe the users aren't listening to each other right. about their expectations, or maybe the IT department isn't listening. And so my job is to take a holistic approach and bring the players to the table and facilitate a conversation and try to tease apart what the root problem is. And I bet there's a lot of similarities in her business. And then I listened to Suzanne talk a little bit about resources and how do you explain the choices to a business owner. And I resonate with that as well. And so if there's something that entrepreneurially I guess I fall back on every time is to listen to the people around the table and steal their great ideas and try to turn it into something that I can use in my business, because very often there's not enough money to go around in a small business to take care of all of the technical needs. And so you end up prioritizing and you do a risk analysis. And my job is to facilitate a little bit of the what the endings would be if you choose this adventure or that adventure, or that's a dead end, don't go down that path. And so I do a lot of education and a lot of business analysis for my clients. So you asked two questions. What does it mean today for small business owners? It's no different than large business owners. You always can use more thinkers and more people to help you make decisions. And very often, sometimes you don't know what you're looking at. And so I'm really good at describing the pretzel, and then I'm really good at undoing the pretzel. And it's because I try to take from other good practices like integrated holistic approaches and bringing lots of disciplines to the table to really solve the problem, and concretely explaining A, B, C, cost, reward, risk, reward. So those are my superpowers.
Well, there you go. I mean, your company, Next Trio, by the way, how is that formulated? Is it as logical as I think it is?
It is.
People?
It's three people who really didn't know what the business was going to turn into. You might remember that we started in 2002, and shortly before, shortly after we started, Windows XP was released, and we saw the handwriting on the wall that was going to be a game changer for businesses. And if you remember the day that you moved from Windows 98 or Windows 95 to XP, you remember that being a big step up. And we knew very quickly that our jobs on that day in May of 2002 was going to be nothing like what we do today, and that's true. So we wanted to give ourselves a little elasticity, and Next Trio was a good short name that's memorable.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
The domain was available.
You've pumped more than, that's the other thing, it was available.
Exactly.
You have pumped more than $20 million in high-tech salaries and wages into the Tucson economy, and that's over the last 16 years. You'd have to be fairly proud of that.
I am, and you know what's unmeasurable is also because we don't just come in and replace an IT department. We're not just working with businesses who have no IT resources. We work with many, many businesses who need us to supplement on a project or to help them get from point A to point B in their knowledge. And so what I don't have account of is the many, many IT professionals we kept employed that really were able to do better in their job because we came and partnered with them. And, you know, sometimes that can be a territorial thing, and it's not exclusive to the IT industry, but lots of times professionals don't welcome outside opinion.
Right.
And many, many times we've been fortunate to work with people who just embraced us and said, thanks a lot for the injection of knowledge and the shared experience and the feeling of not being alone. And they kept their jobs longer and got more recognition because we were able to say, that's a gem. You're getting good value from that person. Treat them well.
Right.
So there's some extra salaries in there that I take credit for that I can never really measure.
Well, 16 years, it's a long time in technology.
It's like dog years. Yeah.
You know,
I'm an old lady.
How has your tech advice to business owners changed over the years?
Well, so beyond the obvious, which is the technology has continued to change at an ever-increasing pace, more and more I spend time talking about human capital in the most recent days, largely because Tucson's experiencing an increase in our economic success. And so the competition for good resources is mm-hmm. getting very tight, and people are feeling like they can move between jobs, which is a great thing. So mm-hmm. I try to talk about, you know,
this is instead of what saying, look, I can't go anywhere, this is it, I'm sticking.
Yeah,
so, if I want to stay in Tucson, this is the job.
In many, many cases, during tough economic times, there weren't a lot of choices for successful people to move between companies. You want to kind of keep your head down and keep the job you have mm-hmm. and not end up at the end of the music without a chair to sit in. Now that there's a lot more opportunity, businesses are moving to town, so we end up talking about ways to relax our expectations of owning an employee for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. And that that employers need to adjust their mindsets about how you can apply outsourcing agencies like myself or contract workers, or allow your employees to have two jobs, and mm-hmm. that's an okay thing. And so I talk about human capital and talent acquisition in IT on the way to completing IT projects for people. That's one major difference. The other way is the impact of the cloud and the business model.
I was going to say, you know, we hear a lot about this cloud technology now.
You can buy anything in just about any increment, down to the minute. And it's not just technology. It's mm-hmm. equipment. It's services. It is, utility-like in its ability to turn off, turn down. What that has done has leveled the playing field. The big companies used to only be able to make those investments in new systems. Mm. Now the small companies suddenly have the buying power of these very cash-rich big companies.
This
that
is
they
what the cloud
had.
Has afforded.
Sure, when you can buy.
Aren't there any disruptive services or forces about the cloud? Is it all wonderful and positive?
Well, disruptive can be positive. Change is good. There are risks, which is different than disruption. And risks, I actually was at a robotics conference put on by Pima Community College yesterday, and a person in the audience said, is cloud less secure? And I said, then what? And he said, well, then my equipment I used to have in my data room in my office. And I said, you know, it's a presumption that your equipment was secure in your data center or in your office. There's a lot of different kinds of risks. So you need to know who you're doing business with. You need to know where your information's at. You need to know what your fallback plan is. Those are different risk analyses. But the lucky part of what we used to do and we couldn't do well, kind of the asteroid hitting Earth model, we didn't have people spending quite the same amount of time protecting our data, backing up our data. We didn't have the scale to have two of everything or more.
So
there's a lot of that has gone away from the cloud. The cloud gives you redundancy and security and just sort of maintenance that you never would have been able to afford when you just had one off of something sitting in a room. But we felt like it was secure because we could touch it. And that's a false sense of security. That's lucky we didn't get hit by an asteroid. That's really kind of a
right. But even now, when you say it's cloud, you know, look, it's all secure. It's in the cloud. Mm-hmm. It's still really just on databases in a room somewhere, isn't it? Technically,
it's a very large room managed by hundreds of people, and there's probably an exact copy of that room on another side of the planet.
So that is
the difference between the cloud, if it's done well.
Well, I mean, in a big operation like yours, Jamie Vink, now we're talking about Sierra. This comes under your species too, doesn't it? Worrying about all, high tech, what's going on with your division. And you'd have to, everybody today who's running a serious business and company, have you found a Suzanne in your consulting and dealing with businesses that, you know, it often comes up over a lunch conversation or it's a priority? priority worry for businesses, the tech side of the business, you know, being able to do things.
Oh, absolutely. And there's also a huge tech component, too, with PR and marketing. You know, everything is online. I work all the time with publications and producers and having to get information out. And there's different ways, too, that we share large images. And yeah, it's, I think that's a very real need for every business.
In
they have
own,
to have yeah. that. Yeah.
Well, let's face it, you can do things today, can't you, that were, you know, even a few years ago were hopelessly, you know, you wish you could do them then. Now you can. It's just about nearly everything. You can send, change, Adobe Create, fix. There's so much. But I guess, is the social media for your line of work, for your area of expertise, is that a lot that businesses want to know about more than anything else as far as online is concerned?
Absolutely. I mean, social media is so huge. As we all know, I think our lives are touched now, you know, all across the board by social media and the way people are sharing information. And it's and originally, of course, it was more for personal use. It was kind of for fun. And now businesses are using it very successfully mm-hmm. to market their products and services. A lot of, you know, B2C, business to consumer, but more so and more so all the time, you know, business to business. So yeah, everybody wants to know about social media. The only problem is, though, that I fear is that right now, like a few years ago, like for Facebook, it was just such an amazing tool. And now with everything that's been happening recently in terms of security breaches and so mm-hmm. forth, Facebook is tending to fall off and things are going more towards Instagram. It all depends on the nature of the business terms of what platform you should use successfully.
You do read that maybe Instagram will take over, you know, Facebook.
Which is owned by Facebook, so.
Anyway.
I guess they don't.
That's a whole lot. Let's go back a little bit. How did you know you wanted to go down this road career-wise? And when did you first fall into public relations, per se?
When I first fell into it, I have my degree in business marketing. But about 10 years ago, I was a marketing and communications director for a nonprofit in New Mexico, serving the elderly and disabled. And one day, I had the executive director come into my office and said, "Suzanne, you're going to start doing all the PR." And that wasn't necessarily what I had been used to. So suddenly I was going to do the TV segments, the radio segments, working with different publications to get us as much press as possible. And at the same time, we had a very, very limited budget, you know, which is not a huge story. You heard that from almost everybody, small business and nonprofit. So I was on a mission to find out every free avenue to get the word out about this wonderful nonprofit. And that's when I really learned about a lot of guerrilla marketing techniques, different ways to get the word out through strategic communications, social media. That was a little bit early then, but then again, it's still free. So it's definitely, I looked into email marketing but I really fell in love with it. It was really fun. And I was amazed at the power of public relations, because suddenly so many more people knew about the services. It was helping so many of the senior population in New Mexico. So,
right.
And then I decided, well, you know what? Maybe I can do this for other people. And
so
I love it. It's really
one
fun.
One thing led to another type. And then,
yeah, isn't that like life?
Isn't it?
You know, and you find something that you really love and it grows.
Well, the biggest thing, too, I think, is you got to enjoy what you do. And you obviously do that. Sierra Tucson is a dual-licensed, dual-accredited, internationally recognized treatment center. Tell us, please, Jamie, what are the accreditations?
So we are accredited by JACO. And we are licensed by the state of Arizona as substance use disorder, as well as behavioral health inpatient and residential.
Okay. Now, you're there to help various cases through, you know, difficult times. It takes courage, doesn't it, to seek treatment in the first place?
Absolutely.
Right. And is it clear to the patients that you are genuinely there to get them through whatever's destroying their lives, or are there other feelings that they have, you know, that you're just doing a job, maybe?
You know, it's a very complex situation, and there's something that we look at. I am a therapist by training, and we look at the stages of change in where someone is in their process. Do they realize that there's a problem? Are they kind of dipping their toe in the water of changing their lives but not really buying in? Are they fully on board with changing their life? And are they coming to you saying, my life is in shambles, please assist me and assist my loved ones? So there's a continuum in terms of someone's preparedness to change. And our job as clinicians is to meet that patient where they are at when they walk in the door. You know, we have these beautiful gates that open up, and we have a sign that says, expect a miracle. So I get chills.
That'll give me hope as soon as I walk in the door.
Well, I get chills every time I say it, just because it embraces, and it says we're here for you regardless of where you are in your process. And it's very important in that moment that rapport is established and that our residents understand this is not just a job. This is a vocation. We choose to be there. It's a calling.
Because I think that's a wonderful thing. Somebody loves me. Somebody cares. Mm-hmm. Somebody holds my hand.
And you know, we're going to love you till you can love yourself.
That's
the way I always look at it.
Does the finger point to you, Jamie, to maintain the high standard of excellence in the clinical treatment that Sierra is known for? Even though you're not hands-on today, you're more administrative, aren't you?
That's correct. But I started out with Sierra Tucson as the chief clinical officer.
Okay.
And so the responsibility was all mine in terms of delivering the quality programs and to be sure that our clinicians had the training and the licensure and all of that befitting an organization like ours. And so while I do have responsibility for oversight, I'm not hands-on with it. It's my heart. So yes, I am always involved in the programs.
How does one's journey begin, obviously, other than coming through the gate and saying, expect a miracle? But coming to Sierra, how does that journey start?
So we have a group, and as I mentioned early on, we're part of Acadia Healthcare, and we have a group of treatment placement specialists who are all throughout the country and also in Europe, and they meet with psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, and they are a resource, and they will represent the various Acadia facilities at no cost. And these treatment placement specialists are trained, and they'll listen what's going on in this individual's life, and then they will make the recommendation to Sierra Tucson. So 60% of our residents come through other referring professionals, so that's how the journey would start, in your therapist's office, in your primary care doc's office, that says, hey, things aren't really going well. Perhaps we should talk to these lovely people in the Catalina Mountains.
Let's get you a little bit of help here. Mm-hmm. How can an employee deal with the mental illness in the workplace?
Well, that's such a relevant topic right now, because what we see is going on in the media every day, we see super high functioning people who carry this unspoken and inner darkness. And so as an employee and as an employer, it's all of our duty to, first of all, be sure that mental illness is communicated and spoken of freely without stigma in our workplaces. And so that we now know, not only for our employees, but for their loved ones.
Right.
If there's a struggle, because as I mentioned early on, all lives, all families are impacted by addiction or mental illness. I've yet to find the one, including my own, that hasn't been.
Right.
And so to create that warm environment to say, it's okay to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling depressed, if you're feeling stressed, social media, we have to chat about that later, and what that has done in terms of that expectation in our lives. But to know as employees that we can speak about it, we can speak to our supervisors, our coworkers, and to know that there will not be shame or ramification. Many employers have employee assistance programs where one can go off and get 6 sessions at no cost, so they can get a tune-up, get an assessment, if you will, to figure out what's going on. I think the biggest thing that an employer can do, in addition to the things we mentioned, is to encourage the work-life balance.
Well, that's everywhere, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Christy, you got anything you'd like to ask on that matter?
Well, I'll just tell you that in listening to the way that Jamie talks about her industry, there are so many similarities with the way that we approach our industry as well. Some of the nouns and verbs are different, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not dealing with mental health issues, although I do flippantly joke sometimes that computers cause mental health issues or some early stage feelings. Certainly there, it's an emotional, technology can be a very emotional thing. But we both have catalytic moments mm-hmm. where, and I actually wrote down that she has, you know, beautiful gates that you walk through and have have the first thing that hits you be that, you know, this is where it can possibly change.
Right.
I have that same conversation with my customers. They have had some aha catalytic moment where they got to the point very often that they're overwhelmed. Overwhelmed sometimes for positive reasons. Growth is happening. They are, they feel like they're on the fast track. And sometimes too much positive can really make you feel out of control and contribute to some of these issues in the workplace that make life feel unbalanced. But oftentimes I'm behind. I'm not catching up. This feels hard. There's overwhelming feelings about that. And one of the things that our business always said was that technology is used by humans. We must remember to address the human needs while working on the technical skills. And honestly, that's 49% of what we do. 51% of what we do is interpersonal. So I'm laughing that we frame from different perspectives similar types of interactions with people. Obviously, the stakes are quite different in personal lives than it is in the professional life with the use of technology. So I don't want to at all compare
the
two.
Well, we hear in one breath, but, you know, what you're saying is true. Yeah. But on the other hand, we're talking about robots.
Well, in information overload,
you know, where's the correlation there? What's going to, we don't need humans anymore because robots don't get mentally ill.
Well, so let me be clear about my position about that. In that, if we're employed, automation, artificial intelligence, robots should take some of the work that is most damaging to humans, either physically dangerous or mentally stressful. The most boring stuff can be stressful, right? And so that repetitive tasks are prime for an automated system. It is no denying that robots and artificial intelligence and machine learning can help increase the consistency and the quality of output.
Right.
But it never is going to take a job or replace a human. It does move the human value up higher. And, you know, there's a joke.
Away from the mundane, so to speak.
Away from the mundane or away from the risky.
Okay.
And sometimes if you're not feeling comfortable with that reskilling or that shifting of what you do every day, if you're not ready for change, which I'm sure you don't drag people kicking and screaming through those gates.
No.
Right. And so it's, you have to be ready. There is a catalytic moment where you say, accepting right now, don't know what, but I'm accepting. It's exactly the same in technology and the use of technology in personal and professional lives. And that often means drawing some boundaries. I bet you talk about boundaries all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's how I approach it. Not to say that social media is not just a technology with an outcome. I love social media. I think that if you have the boundaries and you know what your desired outcome is, why you use it and how to box it in, it can be a very powerful tool.
Well, I see the benefits of it for people that really need to communicate, want to come out, want to talk, want to make friends. And if they're by themselves a lot, it's been a great thing.
Sure.
But I also see a lot of other sides. But I think it's a massive debatable thing, isn't it, social media, when you come at it. Caring, Suzanne, is really the topic here, all about caring. How would you describe your attitude towards clients that you have? How do you, how do you keep them passive?
Oh, gosh.
Because it can't be
that's
easy.
That's such an excellent question. And you had sent it to me prior. I have to admit, I truly care for my clients. And I think most successful businesses, in order to really impact clients, is you do have to care. And what I have to do with my clients, with everybody, is I very much first do an intake. I need to know as much as possible about them so I can find out more about their business, what their goals are. And that's one way that I can take that information and kind of match this to the best tools that's going to work for them. You know, some companies, social media might be just the thing. With others, it's definitely PR, meaning articles, meaning TV segments. And what I do with my clients, because of the type of clients I work with generally, I go after the free type of press. And a lot of people don't realize, or, well, maybe they do think that all press is free, but that's not necessarily the case. A lot of press, TV segments, and so forth right now, are they charge, and it could be quite costly. So I very much try to figure out a way that we can position it to get as much free press as we can. And it works so well. So many businesses, what they try to do is they keep marketing to the same people. They'll be on social media. Who's seeing their information? It's always the same people. But what I love about press is that once you do get some additional attention, it brings new people, it brings new awareness, and it also brings you credibility.
Right.
And even better, which works so well, it's just, I don't know, it shocks me every time, is you can take that press now and you can share it on social media. So people miss a TV segment if they didn't see it, something in the Arizona Daily Star, they could also share it with their networks that way to get new awareness,
right,
and also post it on their website.
Right.
And it's so interesting that we keep talking about integration in this whole conversation. And the name of my company is Integrated Marketing and Public Relations. So it's funny that we have all this energy going on because, frankly, especially today with people getting such an immense amount of information on a daily basis, when they see you from different ways, when they see you in an email, when they see you on social media, when they see you in press, these things work together to help small businesses and nonprofits grow. And I've seen it happen so many times. So for me, it's fun.
Yeah.
And you can't separate the professional identity from the personal identity anymore. There are no longer business hours and personal hours. There are waking hours and sleeping hours.
Right.
And so I think that more executives are getting savvy to that and using, trying to bring those two closer together so that their personal identity and their business identity are more authentic. So I see social media
that
as the way they're doing.
That was a brilliant remark. Absolutely. Because it's all about, it's about the caring that Mark mentioned about being authentic.
Yeah. And knowing their own customers.
Christy.
Well, I will tell you, you probably know this, Suzanne, but the number, it used to be that the CFO in the last few years, in the last 1980s to the early 2000s, the CFO was most likely to be CEO of an organization. That was where you trained to take over. And then it was for a while, my people, the IT folks, became the CIO became the more likely to become the heir apparent for the CEO role.
Right.
And that's because we knew how to turn things on and off. Now you know that it's the CMO, the chief marketing officer, because they are supposed to know the customer intimately through both data means, but also that empathetic identification of their target market, and then also turning that into the ethos of the organization so that it comes culturally out of the people within the organization. And I think there'll be a shift in the future because of the talent crunch and the way we're trying to shape things, that it'll be the HR folks who will ascend to the CEO throne. They'll be the next evolution of the chief marketing officer becoming the CEO. But I think that's interesting. If you look back, and someone did a study through the Fortune 500 and said, what was your job right before you became CEO? And they've tracked back that pattern. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, Jamie, based on that, Jamie Vink, CEO, of Sierra Health. What is availability of mental health and stress management resources? What is in the workplace for people to come to you to discuss? What can I mean, do employ in your world, it's such a caring world. It's such a different world from so many other businesses, right? Do they reach out? Do they talk?
They do. And I have been on a mission for the past 18 months. I've been speaking nationally and internationally on the subject of compassion fatigue. And compassion fatigue is a combination of burnout, which happens in all of our organizations. And regardless of your industry, we get burnout. And then vicarious trauma. And vicarious trauma is what happens to us when we hear other people's stories of intense trauma and pain. And given what's happened with the media, with social media, the vicarious trauma is prevalent in all industries as well, because we are hearing things over and over again.
Is this as simple as saying, I'm literally taking it on myself?
Exactly.
I'm wearing your energy. Right?
Yes. And vicarious trauma is interesting because it's not the most heinous thing you've ever heard. It's the thousand horrible things that you've heard. And we end up having cognitive shifts and a change in our worldview because of our vicarious trauma. Different than secondary trauma, which is if I hear or witness someone else's trauma, I can have post-traumatic stress. In organizations, what happens is that combination of the secondary or vicarious trauma and the burnout creates a syndrome called compassion fatigue, where we are done. We can't have empathy. We have no more hope. And those are the kinds of things that are debilitating to a workplace, to organizations, to professionals and their families.
I was going to say, as an employer, what sort of policies, programs do you legally need? Under your banner that you need to have in place to support mental health overall?
So we need to have the employee assistance program in place where we can send our employees confidentially to an outsourced service that will meet with them and provide counseling services.
Okay.
I believe that to have something like this compassion fatigue dialogue open and honest and training, and I created healing groups at Sierra Tucson where people could go and talk with a group of their peers about what's going on for them with their burnout and with their compassion fatigue. And I'm in one of the groups.
Has this been sort of a mission of yours?
Yes,
are you the leader
months.
In this throughout America?
I am the ring. Well, I don't know if I'm the leader in America.
Well, I mean, you're the one that's standing out for it, right?
Absolutely. And this June, I went to London and spoke. And we are probably 10 years ahead of England in these kinds of things. But they just ate it up. They said, I've got that. I've got that.
Good on the Yanks. Leading again by 10 years, right?
Absolutely.
I won't get to Australia for another 15, I can assure you.
Probably.
Oh, that's unfair. But in all jokes aside, it's a mission that you've got. Do they roll their eyes when you get up there?
And no.
No, they
never.
Take it seriously. Because, you are a pioneer, right?
I am. And
to a degree. And you know what that means, right?
I do. And sometimes I find that the people that would hold back a bit more or perhaps think, oh, here she goes, they're the ones that have the most pain.
Right.
And so my challenge is to get to them, to say something in my 2-hour presentation that resonates, something that someone can say, aha, the light goes on.
Right. Even if it's just the one thing got
through.
That's
it. Huh? And I need to talk to someone, even if that someone's a coworker.
Amazing. Let me ask you, Suzanne, say this particular company, and by the way, I meant to mention that a little earlier, you are not a not-for-profit at all, Jamie. You're a serious profit and loss statement, aren't you?
Absolutely. We're part of a publicly traded company.
Well, I'm not saying that .orgs are not serious profit and loss either, but I mean, you've got a board to worry about.
Absolutely.
You have investors to worry about.
Absolutely.
And how do they see all this compassion?
Understand. And I just went to our corporate headquarters in Franklin, Tennessee, and gave a talk on leadership for our new CEOs. And I talked about the culture of safety, that if our patients are safe and our employees feel safe, then our brand is safe. And if we can combine all of those things, and I had this holographic image where in the middle is trust. And if we don't have those components, the financial results will reveal themselves. To me, these are the basics. And mm-hmm. if anyone remembers Maslow's hierarchy of needs from their Psych 101 class, if we're not safe, we're not going to self-actualize. We're not going to thrive. And oh, by the way, accountants, we're not going to make money.
Right, right. It's all the rest of a Joe if you don't look after the beginning, where it all starts. Mm-hmm. How would you handle a client, Suzanne, that came to you with this sort of scenario that they're involved in compared to a client like a Christy Street with Next Trio? Totally diverse.
And they're,
but they're also, you know.
They are. And that's what's very challenging in what I do because, yes, absolutely. I mean, their companies are so different. There's still some similarities in some respect. But even companies in the same industry can be very different because it depends on their goals. It depends what they want to do. Mm-hmm. It depends, you know, basically what they're trying to go to. And I actually have some clients, too, that would be perfect for TV. I have one client that actually has an adventures club in Phoenix. So what they do is that they help people write things off their bucket list. They have all these different adventures, cool things. It's amazing. So people don't have to stay at home. It's like an antidote to social media. Mm-hmm. How cool is that, right? Mm-hmm. So I was able to last fall get them just a ton of press. They're in the front of Arizona Republic, Phoenix Gazette, Entertainer Magazine. But it would have been perfect for TV. Well, she absolutely, this particular wonderful woman, incredibly bright and successful, mm-hmm. would not do it. And I told her, I said, you are so perfect. You are so perfect. You have to do this. And absolutely not. And I have to respect that. You know, everybody's different.
You
everybody's
it's a tough
different.
Job.
So I have to find out where their comfort zone is as well.
Creativity is one thing, but their check or their pocketbook's the other, isn't it?
Yeah. So my job is, you know, as a hired gun, is to get them as much as I possibly can, as many cost-effective avenues as I can. But in the end, yes, you know, they call the shots, and it's all good. You know, it's fine. It just depends on what they want and what they need.
So a meeting them where they're at of sorts, like we do.
Yep.
Means to an end. It's all linked. Yep. Christy, you've spoken a lot lately on cybersecurity and cyber threats. It's been in the news a lot. Can you give us an update on what small business would need to know now?
Well, you know, the short answer is that it's still not sexy. There's a lot of FUD and a lot of news, but the reality is it's like the flu shot. You know, when the flu goes haywire and everybody gets it,
right.
The thing the doctor recommends is the same thing they've been recommending forever, which is get the flu shot, get the vaccine. And we have that same notion in IT that, you know, there are routine maintenance tasks that you just can't get around. You can't do them in spot bungee jump kind of ways. You just have to do it every day. It's right. The discipline of it. So the 90% of what we can do as any size business is related to routine maintenance or educating our workforce, because like it or not, the helpful users, either through neglect or just had no idea, they're the weakest points in the system.
So what is there on the tech horizon that really excites you and your team now, Next Trio?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a lot of interesting security things that can be done automatically, so I don't have to keep having that sort of that discipline conversation, you know, that your primary care person saying diet and exercise and you'll feel good. You know, no one wants to keep going to that primary care physician when that's what they say all the time. So I can automate that and I can do it and take it off of your to-do list. You never even think about it. I think that some of the cool things are the ability to work anywhere and the technology that we're introducing at a reasonable price point that allows us to have not just a video conference where I see a square of you dimly lit through that pinhole on your laptop, but I can see a panoramic view of the room and I can see two people talking, and that's replicating being in the room. Mm. So there are some really interesting, there's a technology called Owl Labs that's producing a panoramic series of cameras to replicate as if you were in a conference room, and it actually You never miss a sidebar. You never don't see Fred rolling his eyes at Susie's comment. You see the whole picture of the room.
That's very good. It's like being there.
And it's $700. I mean, it's reasonable. If you're someone who has remote workforce, mm-hmm. if you're someone who does video conferencing, in the old days, to recreate that, you would spend $7,000 to $70,000, depending on your setup. And you could only have it in one room because it was permanently installed.
And you had to be a big multinational with huge budgets, right?
Absolutely.
The game.
You know, I used to haul around this gigantic shoebox-sized projector that I would go give presentations with. And I bought one yesterday, and I swear it's a 2-inch cube. It's half the size of your business card holder.
Right.
And it projects anywhere from my phone on any
Straight to the wall.
And it's, I mean,
marvelous,
a 100-inch screen. 100 inches. It's bigger than most people have.
Isn't that fabulous? You don't have to cart around the pull-down screens.
It was $150.
Look for PowerPoints on projectors anymore.
It stores movies on it. It has 4 hours of battery time. For $150, it's almost unbelievable how some of the multimedia technology to allow people to collaborate,
right.
which again solves those human problems. But at the end of the day, we solve a lot of heavy tech problems. It's nice that the price points are coming down to make it accessible for people.
Well, let's talk about the human side of it for you. You've got two young children at home.
Mm-hmm.
You work with your husband, which is unusual these days. I did with my wife for a long time until she can't take anymore. She's retired now.
We worked together first. That's the correct order for our relationship.
Well, do you still find time to serve in volunteer capacities in the community? How do you keep it all in balance? In a short answer.
Very, very delicately. I will say that the one of the great things that I try to practice what I preach within our organization is to give myself permission. So this is actually my plan B. I had a big corporate job for a publicly traded company. It was a ideal travel around the world software company that I helped start. And so, stock shares and amazing golden handcuffs. But I was passing my husband in the airport 2 out of 4 weeks a month. And I knew that we would never be able to actually spend quality time with kids. Every day I remind myself that I made the choice to make this the option where I would spend time with my family. My parents are here in town. My sister and her kids are here in town. And it's a conscious prioritization to say, I'm leaving the office right now. I'm going to pick them up every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that means sometimes, like this morning, I was in the office at 4:45. To get my work done so that I could be available right after this interview to go pick my kids up from school and drive them to swim.
That is amazing. Men couldn't do that.
I plug into the wall at night, so I don't actually sleep. I kind of hang upside down and plug in.
There you go. People, see?
But
I don't care where the robots come. We're still human.
Kids grow up.
Kids grow up.
I can do anything until, my son graduates the class of 2030. And if I'm still alive, I will have a good time after that.
See, it's a balance. It's a balance. I mean, look at the results from it. You can sit back and enjoy the fruits of your labor. Hard work. You've made money. You deserve it. Money's only good to spend to make for a cause anyway. But they've got to go to college over it. And then you can relax a little, right? Because you've given them a wonderful life.
One will go to Stanford. The other will, she'll go to Stanford to get a law degree to get him out of jail. So it'll work out great.
Let's talk about people. Now, I'm going to ask Jamie this one first. How do you get your good staff, good people? How do you get them in Tucson?
Well, there's a lot of really wonderful, talented people in Tucson. And so what we have done is we promote a lot from within. We develop. I have comprehensive development plans for everyone that reports directly to me, and I have in my other positions. We make training available, education, licensure, those kinds of things. And so the first answer to that question is to grow our own talent, if you will. It took me 55 minutes to get here, so we're out of town a bit, up off in Catalina.
Nice and peaceful.
Mm-hmm. Peaceful, but it's tough, especially for lower wage earners. in order to get there.
Okay.
And so
gas prices, well, they're down, but it's still, you know, a commitment, isn't it?
Public transportation,
public
those
transportation
sorts of things.
As well. But how do you find the medical ones so easily? Mm-hmm. Are we such a great resource?
We are, and you know, we have the University of Arizona mm-hmm. Medical School. We partner with them. We also partner with Midwestern Medical School in Phoenix.
Yeah.
We're extremely blessed, and the more that we work on the relationship with those universities, the more incredible talent they send to us. Mm. We also tap the Phoenix market quite regularly. That's where I came from.
Okay.
We just recruited an incredible chief medical officer from Phoenix. And because of the ability to work remotely 1 or 2 days a week, we're able to be flexible that way. And so the other thing that we do, nursing is really where we experience our greatest shortage. We often have open houses for people to get to know us and offer flexible schedules so that people can have that balance with their family and with their loved ones.
So you keep an eye on this too. This is one of the things that you have a passion about is your staff having a balance.
Absolutely.
Making sure that's good. That's nice to hear. Suzanne, you don't have to worry about this, do you? You don't have to worry about any of that. You're a lone wolf, right?
Well, not exactly, Mr. Bishop.
You work with associates, but you don't have those pressures of staff per se. They're not on your, you know, dime, are they?
No, I do outsource, but I have had people that I've outsourced for years. So it's very much building a relationship in terms of my associates. I have people that help with social media. I have people that help with photography. I'm working with a lady now that actually is a body language expert, so she could work with my clients before they go on TV because I was having some problems because it's so important. But no, they're not actual employees. But maybe next year at this time, I will have one.
Well, you're growing well and truly. You know, you're getting a big name.
Need it.
Because we're getting close to closing. But Christy, you've been able to attract the caliber of staff that have seemed to be, you know, excellent.
Yeah, I think A attracts A. And so what we do is when we have a shortage of A, we do grow our own. And we know that the commodity, especially in our industry, and that many industries are like this, where the high burnout risk means that the average tenure is about 18 months. Our average tenure is at about 6.3 years. So we are more than tripling that. And it's because just this morning I was pleased to announce that we're at the size and scale now that I can roll out the opportunity for some of my staff to have a compressed work schedule. So they'll put in 4 10s instead of 5 8-hour workdays.
Yeah, a lot of it's going to go this way, isn't it, in the future, do you think?
You know, I think a wide variety of people in Tucson enjoy that flexibility so that they can live in another part of town and they're not making the commute so far, or they can travel, or they can hike, or they drive Uber on the weekend. I don't know what they do with their
longer
time.
Longer weekends with the family.
It's a reset. You know? Yeah, for many people, it's a trade-off of childcare, which is crazy expensive for the middle-wage workers today. It's really almost unreasonable. So there's a lot of flexibility that size and scale gives you. But I also see, and I talk to a lot of people about, there may be no cause to ever hire a full-time employee ever again, unless that person is a secret sauce. If they provide a service that you're actually better off buying in a commoditized way, for example, marketing experience, for example, IT experience, there are so many tech skills, there are so many marketing skills that you need that to buy one person is sometimes the worst thing you can do because you rob that person of the variety that informs their information to you, and you cage your options down to whatever that one person knows or keeps up with. So I highly, not that I don't love my employees, I do every day, but I highly, you know, recommend that anyone who's been able to make it work without really consider before making that first offer of employment. I think that there's a lot of options before dedicated. There is no such thing as they're going to work for you forever anymore. There just isn't.
No.
Yeah. With that being said, I will say, Mark, the other thing we're rolling out is the Nextrio Alumni Network.
Okay.
And this I stole, so I'm not claiming that I own this idea at all. Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, actually does this with his. And it's the idea that even when someone doesn't work for you anymore, they can still be a huge advocate for you.
Right.
And that they can supply your future clients. Yeah. So I want to keep that relationship positive. So we're inviting back all of our alumni from the last 16 years.
Well, that's very nice. I mean, and people can go to your website because we haven't got the time, but I could rattle off from 2005, you've been winning awards right through nearly every year, but right through to 2017. Accolades and awards are amazing for Nextrio.
And I saw Jamie at the Women of Influence Awards. She's no slouch. I haven't met Suzanne before today. You know, Tucson does a great job, actually, in recognizing business excellence and, in particular, lifting up female leaders in not only in leadership roles, but in mentorship opportunities. So while I would love to take credit for the fact that the resume is long, I think that it bears more credit for this city and our region that we do a really good job of nominating and recognizing women who make an impact and who have the opportunity to meet others. So that's unique.
That's exactly why No Glass Ceiling is doing what it's doing. I think we're blessed in this city, in this part of America, to have the women in business that we have and the talents and skills. We've got to close. One question each before we go. I'll start with you, Christy, for a short answer on this. What was your biggest failure?
At one point, very early on, I thought that I could outsource the responsibility for selling. And when you are passionate, that often in the early stages is you might be the only one who can close the deal. You can have folks who help you along the way, but you in some respect are the only one who can fully close the most important deals. And so still today, I found ways to replicate that and delegate that, but I never again will fully outsource the responsibility for closing the deal.
What about you, Suzanne, if I was to ask you the same question?
Oh, that is a very difficult one, Mark. And I'm sure I have a lot of failures, but the only one that I could think of at this moment, I was very new to Phoenix, and I had gotten a client on Fox News very early in the morning on a Sunday. And there was this big, like a run that was going on. So there's all sorts of detours. And what happened, and this was a huge thing, it's for a theater troupe. I was late to the studio. For the life of me, I could not find. There was detours everywhere. I know this isn't the answer that you were wanting.
It's what's
on
top of mind.
It was one of the worst things. I'll never forget it. I was so embarrassed. Luckily, everybody else got there in time.
Right. Well, for
and
you,
by the way, they did a terrible job.
Should you be so lucky?
So
that's
it's not
it
a great day.
You know, come on, Jamie, yours too. What would be the worst thing, or what's the biggest mistake you've made?
Hung in too long with an employee that I shouldn't have trusted in the first place, because I was going to fix him and change him and all of it, and I got my hat handed to me, and I learned. Not doing that again. And people are nodding their heads.
That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of entrepreneurship. That's the beauty of top management. You've got to make those decisions. You go by your heart. But hey, at the end of the day, you never do it again, do you?
Yep.
You learn by it.
And we say, I was wrong. Forgive me.
Mm-hmm. We've been very fortunate today in No Glass Ceiling. Christy Street is the co-founder and the CEO of Nextrio. Nextrio.com. Mm-hmm. Easy to go to on the site. Have a good look and a good read. There's plenty there. And add to that, you'll be able to see all the awards we were talking about. Suzanne Jamison, she shared all about public relations, the Arizona-based boutique marketing and public relations firm. And she specializes in integrated marketing. And thank you, Suzanne, for coming on No Glass Ceiling today. We appreciate it. And last but certainly not least, our Irish-Belgian lady, JBW Vink. And Jamie is the CEO of Sierra Tucson. But they were lovely, and they were I learned a lot today. My mind is ticking over. But thanks a lot. And I do appreciate you being on No Glass Ceiling on Tucson Business Radio. Thank you, ladies.